think we can produce all the electricity we need in this country through wind, solar, and other earth-friendly sources? And can we do this in 10 years, as Al Gore yesterday said we should?
The only way to get relief from rising gasoline prices is a breakout strategy, to break free of the trap that we're in because of our overdependence on fossil fuels, principally oil and coal. Luckily, we do now have alternatives that are cost effective.
Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, July the 18th. And we will talk this hour about Gore's challenge and a new report from a Wisconsin environmental group that calls for a dramatic increase in plug-in hybrid cars to move away from an oil-based transportation economy. We will welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Michael Kraft, a professor of public and environmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, we called you at first because you were quoted in this report from the group Wisconsin Environment. But then Al Gore issued this challenge. It's okay if we talk about both, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I mean, Al Gore's is maybe even more dramatic than the Wisconsin Environment report.
Right.
Can we, in 10 years, wean ourselves off of fossil fuels and produce all the electricity we need in this country through wind and other renewable sources?
I think that's doubtful, not unless we want to build a whole lot of nuclear power plants, and they take about 6 to 8 years or more to build. I haven't seen the full text of Gore's statements. I'm not sure on what he bases the claim. But aside from the particulars of what he said, he's trying to suggest, as did the Wisconsin Environment Report, that we really need to think seriously about our future and start moving away from fossil fuels, partly because of concern about climate change and partly because of the concern of high gasoline prices and very heavy reliance on imported oil. So in that sense, what both statements are trying to say is it's time to get serious about the way we use energy and think of new technologies and alternatives to oil, and particularly alternatives to fossil fuel for generating electricity, which is how we get most of our electricity, that is coal and natural gas.
Yeah. Well, aside from, $4 plus a gallon gas, why is it important that we move away from fossil fuels for energy and transportation?
Well, I think the main argument and the emphasis in the report issued yesterday by Wisconsin Environment is the concern about climate change or global warming. That is to say, burning fossil fuels releases carbon dioxide, and most of the oil we import goes to the transportation sector, and most of the, as Gore was trying to suggest, most of the electricity we generate comes from the burning of fossil fuels. Electricity from nuclear power is about 20% of total electricity production, so about 80% comes from fossil fuels. And it's important that we get away from that, primarily because we have already begun seeing some effects of climate change, and much more is likely in the future, and the effects are not at all likely to be positive for us or the rest of the world.
Yeah, and it sounded like Gore was, trying to take a line from JFK and sort of set this goal, we need to do this within 10 years.
Well, setting a goal is important because it gets people's attention, and it could lead to a crash research and development program by government and tax credits and so forth for individuals and industry that move to, for example, solar collectors on your roof to generate electricity would mean you're not drawing electricity from the regular grid where it's produced from, as it is around Wisconsin, for example, from either nuclear power or burning coal.
Yeah, and maybe the timing for this is right in that we are all kind of very concerned about paying the high gas prices we are, and the concerns that maybe fossil fuels are at a...
That's part of it. I think the other part is it's a presidential election year, no surprise. And what you're going to see between now and next March are a lot of reports coming out calling for new directions in healthcare policy and new directions in energy policy, because after 8 years, there's a sense that it's people and policymakers are ready to embark on some new ventures, and healthcare just as much as in energy, we really need to do something different,
mm-hmm.
in a kind of breakout way. That is, just stop playing with the old issues and try something really new. And Al Gore is, has a habit of trying to push the country in new directions in this way. Certainly he did so with his film and Inconvenient Truth, and I think this falls into that vein. But as technologically, I'm sure we probably have some engineers out there who would say there's no way within 10 years you can do that. And I think what people need to bear in mind is the main alternative of a conventional energy source, the main alternative to using coal and natural gas would be nuclear. An awful lot of people who are upset about climate change and use of fossil fuels and burning oil in our cars also don't like nuclear power.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only other viable commercial size energy source, energy source that we have for electricity production. And we have not been building nuclear power plants in the last 30 years.
Michael Kraft, our guest, he is a professor of public and environmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. We're talking about Al Gore's challenge issued yesterday that this nation has to find other ways to produce electricity and wants all of our electricity within 10 years to come from renewable sources. And we're also talking about a report from a Wisconsin environmental group that wants us to kick the gasoline habit for our cars. And we welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. It's 17 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, July the 18th. Coming up on Talk of the Nation Science Friday after 1 o'clock this afternoon, the latest solar energy news, including a look at the legislative snarl that has solar industry execs biting their nails, and more talk about oil drilling as well after 2 o'clock on Science Friday. How much oil is out there? We're talking about energy and energy policy this hour as well, and welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest, Michael Kraft, professor of public and environmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, talking with us about Al Gore's challenge yesterday to find different ways to produce electricity, renewable ways to produce electricity. Also talking about a report from a Wisconsin environmental group that was calling for ways to fuel our cars not using fossil fuels. This report, Professor Kraft, calling for a dramatic increase in hybrid vehicles, that plug-in cars. Is that what we need to do?
Well, that would certainly be one of the things we need to do. The report, by the way, is called Beyond Oil, and it is available at Wisconsin Environment's webpage in a PDF format for those who care to read. It's not a very long report. It's about 40 pages. What it really says is we need to think carefully about all of the fuels that we use and about the long-term consequences. So the focus was on the global warming consequence. But I think it made a very nice case that if we're going to think about transportation or generating electricity, we need to consider every option that we have and pick those that are most economical, that do the least environmental damage, that are good for public health and good for the economy and don't force us to rely on other nations that are not friendly to us and so forth. And what they called for was a serious consideration of a variety of forms of generating ethanol, biodiesel, electricity, natural gas, hydrogen, and so forth. And in particular, I think for automobiles, they like the idea of plug-in hybrids, which I believe are still a bit, in terms of commercial production for the average individual, still a couple of years away. Many auto companies are working on that. Plug-in hybrid, by the way, most people know a hybrid is a combination gasoline-electric. Plug-in means you can also just charge that battery in your garage overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do it that way, then the mileage equivalent would be about 150 miles per gallon in some models. So obviously that's way beyond what you can get with a conventional gasoline car or a conventional hybrid.
Yeah. You know, a lot of us scratch our heads, though. We're going to be using electricity produced by coal-fired plants.
You've got to produce the electricity if you're burning coal or running nuclear power plants. Some say, well, and then what's the difference? And the difference is you get those power plants maybe away from the cities where you minimize public health damage. And then if Al Gore is right, you produce the electricity, not through burning coal, or maybe not through nuclear power, but eventually some other energy sources. Then you have an ideal situation where you're running essentially a plug-in hybrid is essentially an electric car. I mean, the gold standard here is you want a car that doesn't pollute at all, and you generate your electricity from non-polluting renewable sources.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. That's what Al Gore had in mind. He talked about yesterday or the day before the focus that he has on more electric cars.
With gasoline at $4 and $5 a gallon, it's possible to run an electric car on the equivalent of $1 a gallon gasoline. And as we shift our electricity grid over to more renewable sources, the electric car is going to be a much bigger part of our fleet.
So that's what he has in mind.
Well, I look forward to my next car being electric if one's available. But you know, people want a car that's available at a reasonable price, too, and exotic technologies can drive the price up. That's why some people have stayed away from hybrids.
Yeah, and Wisconsin Environment does not want us to be putting corn ethanol in our cars.
Oh, correct, yes. And that's why I said the emphasis is on carefully evaluating all of the alternatives. And some people say, well, what's wrong with then just growing more corn and converting the corn to ethanol? And what's wrong with it is it's a very inefficient process. And I think we've all seen one important consequence, which is the rising price of food. And not just corn, because as farmers turn to corn, they're not planting other crops, and so the price of wheat has gone up. Every bakery in the country knows that. And then we've led, these decisions have led to food shortages around the world. So what Wisconsin Environment is saying is just common sense, which is before you launch a major government subsidy of some new energy technology, such as ethanol from corn, you really need to think through what you're doing and make sure you're not actually compounding the problem or creating another problem to replace the one you started with, and I think that's what we've done. But there are other technologies for making ethanol from products other than corn. Brazil does it right now and has done for years. They make they build cars in Brazil. General Motors and Ford are making them. My understanding is only for about $100 more, you can make a car that runs on flex fuels, up to 85% ethanol.
And sugar ethanol.
And the ethanol is made from sugar cane. So you're not using a food crop. Sugarcane can produce sugar, of course, but what you're using, you can use essentially if we get the technologies right, you can use agricultural waste and wood waste and other kinds of products to make ethanol or methanol. China's starting some methanol plants. And so that's the report calls for looking at those kinds of alternatives at minimal extra cost. Israel was trying to build electric cars, and for good reason, Israel would like to be an oil-free economy and not dependent on its neighbors. And so that, I think, in the spirit of Al Gore, we're looking for alternatives in the next decade or two. We want it can be a public-private cooperative effort, as it was the case in the Clinton administration. There was something called the Partnership for a New Generation of Vehicles, which was a government Detroit automaker partnership to develop essentially electric cars. That didn't go too far. George Bush replaced that with an effort to develop fuel cell cars, but that's an even more exotic technology that's probably years away.
Yeah, we have lots of callers, so let me go to Elizabeth in Waukesha first. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, as a matter of practicality, most of us can't junk our prison cars, and I'm wondering if they dealt with some way for retrofitting. T-Bone Pickens said we could run our cars retrofit to natural gas. And perhaps if the government underwrote some of the changes and perhaps junking of cars and buying new cars more sustainable, that would work. Something to do with the practical problem of what to do with your present investments.
That's a challenge. I mean, what we've seen in the last 6 months is a lot of people with large trucks and SUVs are trying to sell them and buy smaller cars, and that's always one alternative, that people sell their car and buy another one, but that's a big economic price if you're going to take a $10,000 hit on selling a car that's no longer desirable. And practically, the figures I've seen suggest the average car stays on the road about 16 or 17 years, and so it's one reason why you cannot switch the entire vehicle fleet to whatever new technology comes along in a very short period of time. And it's a major burden on people who just bought a car, for example, and thought they were getting good mileage, but now realize gasoline is two or three times as expensive. There are some retrofit technologies, and somebody, one of the callers, may speak to that. But I would say generally that's going to be an expensive proposition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she just reminded me that T-Bone Pickens wants to get off of oil, and he's an oil man, and wants to go to wind and solar, and he seems to think we can do this too.
Yeah, well, there are certainly you can generate electricity right now through solar. There are plants going up all over the West on Bureau of Land Management lands to generate electricity from solar thermal collectors and large photovoltaic arrays. The technologies are there, but it will take a while to get those
Yeah.
Building. And again, you can't put electricity in your car unless you have a
right
battery to.
Peter in Washburn, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Well, I really think that we can do this. It wouldn't be the first time that we've made this nation turn on a dime. And I really think that we need to take all that money that we're spending in Iraq, and we need a FDR-type administration and those programs that we had during our greatest generation. You know, we can retool those auto production plants to do stuff. They went from making cars to planes in a very short time. And I just think that to say that we can't do it is just, we have to. What other option do we have? And a comment on the nuclear aspect, uranium is a finite resource, and we are looking at, peaking in production of available uranium for enrichment. So at some point, we're also going to run out of uranium.
Yeah.
And I'll take the answer off the air.
Yeah, the reason I mentioned nuclear is if you talk to anyone who runs a major coal-producing plant, they would say, if you don't like coal, the only other major technology that can substitute is nuclear. And even if nuclear is a bridge fuel, that is to get you through a few decades until you have new technologies. It is an existing technology that we already use for 20% of our electricity.
Mm-hmm. And you were saying that you doubted that without nuclear that we could go to completely...
Well, I don't know what other technologies mm-hmm. there are, mm-hmm. but again, I agree with Peter mm-hmm. that this is the time for government and industry and individuals to pool resources and start developing new technologies. Frankly, we should have done it several decades ago. Jimmy Carter in the 1970s was worried about some of the same conditions we face today and said the country and presidents after that worried about developing an independent energy economy in the United States. And we're much more dependent on imported oil today than we were back then.
Yeah. Well, what do you see politically, Professor Kraft? We just have a couple of minutes before a news break. Do you see the next administration, next Congress pushing for this?
Well, depending on which administration. But either mm-hmm. way, you're going to have a difference from the Bush administration. So John McCain's record on energy and environment is far different from George Bush's. Barack Obama, simply because there's a difference between the two major parties, is it would be more likely, I think, and a Democratic Congress, which I suspect is likely after the elections, would be more likely. But I wouldn't take anything for granted. Congress responds to what the public wants, and some public pressure on politicians can make a difference. And I think if enough people demand that this be the, as Al Gore says, if this is the time to move ahead on energy initiatives and people convey that message to elected officials at the local level, the state level, the national level, I think you'll see some change.
We're talking with Michael Kraft, professor of public and environmental affairs at UW Green Bay, talking with us about Al Gore's challenge that we get off of fossil fuels and that we start getting all of our electricity from renewable sources within 10 years. And we're also talking about a Wisconsin Environmental Group's report that calls for more plug-in hybrid cars and less corn-based ethanol. We welcome your questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Al Gore is setting the bar high for the next president with a goal of 100% alternative energy to generate electricity. Gore says without dramatic changes to reduce global warming pollution within the next decade, then, as he put it, our ability to ever recover from this environmental crisis may be lost. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:36 on this Friday, July the 18th. We're talking about Gore's challenge this hour, and we are also talking about how to get off of fossil fuels in general, following up on a new report from a Wisconsin environmental group, Wisconsin Environment, that makes a number of recommendations to state and federal policymakers for reducing global warming pollution from cars and light trucks and reducing our oil dependence. We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, Michael Kraft, a professor of public and environmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Right now, our lines are full, but you can get in an email if you'd like to talk@wpr.org. Back to the phones we go. Our next caller is Bill in Milwaukee. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a solution that I've heard of that might get us out of this debacle, and I want to share it. I've heard of these cars. They run on compressed air, and I researched it on the web. And if you put 110 square feet of solar panels on your roof of your garage, which isn't that much, you can run an air compressor in your garage with a tank during the day while you're at work. And when you come home, drive in your garage and fill it up with compressed air. It'll run well over 50 miles on one tank. And you can get them with a gas engine, like a little hybrid, just to keep it going if you do need to use gas. For a commuter car, I mean, you would have totally clean, totally free energy. It would be infinite miles per gallon.
The fuel is compressed air, Bill?
Yes, compressed air. Yeah, it's compressed air. It's not dangerous because if the tank gets punctured, it's designed to blow up in all directions, so it won't be dangerous.
Oh, okay.
And they're doing this in India and Australia.
All right.
They're building these. It's a French company.
Yeah. Have you heard of this, Professor Kraft?
Well, I've heard of it from time to time. Of course, you still would have to use energy to compress the air, unless you're doing this for a solar.
Right. I think you were saying solar panels in your garage would do this. Yeah.
And you'd have to have a vehicle retrofitted to be able to run on a compressed air tank. Whether this is feasible or for the entire vehicle fleet, I think in the spirit of what Al Gore was suggesting yesterday, this is a time to explore all kinds of new technologies. And the home that the report was released at here in Green Bay yesterday, the owner has put a solar panel on his roof. He's talking about taking his Toyota Prius and making it a plug-in hybrid through a conversion kit. I think a lot of individuals have been very creative in redesigning and retrofitting their own homes and their own vehicles. There are people who have converted their cars and trucks to run on biodiesel fuel and are finding local sources of biodiesel, so they have free fuel. But this is all small scale compared to what we need for the entire, for millions and millions of cars a year. I think we have to look to industry to design some new technologies and that ordinary people can afford to do or have the ability to do on their own.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Bill, for the call. Deborah in Waukegan, Illinois. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm parking my car while I'm talking to you, so I hope I don't lose you. But my question is just in general distributive technology. Your guest is talking about big things. I keep seeing a million ways that we could do things in our house. I mean, I wish I knew an engineer because I have lots of ideas. I mean, anyway, it seems to me that if there were more government subsidy that made it really easy for people to create sources in their own backyard. I mean, I was just really inspired by an article in New Yorker. I don't know if you've seen it about the Isle of, I think it's called Stance in the middle of Denmark, where over 10 years, this farming community has just not only gotten off the grid, but it's feeding energy to the grid. And they've done it in large part by each farmer setting up something for themselves. Yeah, my husband and I would do lots of things if we could afford them.
Yeah. And Deborah, it's kind of hard to hear you with all the traffic sound, but what about the subsidies and help?
Yeah, I think what Deborah's pointing to is something that we have had in this country for 30 years off and on, which is the government creates a tax credit or some kind of subsidy that inspires individuals to put a solar panel on their home, to have solar thermal heating, or merely to conserve energy and improve energy efficiency. Just in the last few years, there have been federal and state incentives for people who add more insulation to their attic, who weatherize their homes through new windows and doors, and to get some money back. That is, we want to create a real monetary incentive for people to do what they already are inclined to do, but which is going to cost them some money. And so we make it easier for them to shift over to a new technology. In the meantime, we create some economic incentives for new industries to begin. And we've done that historically. Nuclear power wouldn't exist in this country if the federal government hadn't subsidized its development. Today we need, and I think this is in the spirit of Al Gore's statement, we need to have government at all levels thinking about and promoting new technologies and eventually fostering those that offer the greatest promise. And one way to do it is to spur individuals through economic incentives to buy hybrid vehicles or high mileage vehicles that are other than hybrid.
Yeah, I was hearing some debate over all this just the other day, and I didn't realize that oil, natural gas, coal, you mentioned nuclear, heavily subsidized by the government, but the alternatives are not so much.
Well, the joke always was, the response by some politicians was, well, renewable energy is fine, but it's going to have to make it in the marketplace. And the response is, no fuel has ever made it on its own in the marketplace. They've all been subsidized historically. Nuclear, the classic example, but right now, there have been debates in Congress this year about the subsidies we have for oil production in this country, and Democrats want to cut back on it. Republicans favor keeping it. So in the larger scheme of things, government does have a lot to say about which technologies get developed. They have historically, and what Al Gore is saying is they should do the same in the future, but shift the technologies that we use to renewable.
Yeah. A related debate going on right now is, and I guess it's Republicans versus Democrats to some extent, is whether we need to start drilling for more oil offshore,
right.
Especially or in Alaska.
Well, Alaska and off California and Florida, Texas shores.
Right.
And this is, here again, this is a classic split between the parties. The Republicans historically have favored increasing oil supplies. The Democrats have favored energy conservation and efficiency and have been disinclined to favor more production. I guess what Al Gore would say is, if we're going to have more production, it should be from something other than fossil fuel. So if all you do is drill for more oil, you're still an oil-dependent economy. And realistically, we cannot drill our way out of this. There's not enough oil in the world to meet the rising demand in India and China, and it's a world oil market. Even if we drilled offshore for oil, who's to say that oil wouldn't be exported?
Yeah.
Which
and
is part of the problem.
We'll go to, let me do our weather break and then take more calls for Michael Kraft, Professor of Public and Environmental Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, talking about kicking the fossil fuel habit and looking for more alternative sources of energy following Al Gore's challenge yesterday, and also a report from a Wisconsin environmental group, Wisconsin Environment, saying that there are many alternatives to oil, especially when it comes to our cars. And we welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we'll welcome in Ed Garvey and Rick Berg to talk with you about the news of the week, the Week in Review, coming up in our next hour. We are talking with a guest about a report released yesterday from the Wisconsin Environment Group. It's called Beyond Oil, the Transportation Fuels That Can Help Reduce Global Warming. And at the same time, we're talking about Al Gore's call for reducing global warming by producing all of our electricity in this country within the next 10 years from renewable or alternative sources. Michael Kraft, a professor of public and environmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, our guest, and Jack Endowsman is our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Is that me?
Yes, it is you, Jack.
Well, bear with me just a little bit because I'm a little nervous.
Oh, don't be nervous.
Go ahead, Jack.
I tried to get this call through to Al Gore yesterday, but today it appears to be just as apropos. I would like to know why we cannot build wind turbines high above the railroad, along the railroad right-of-way. Now, we can build the Eiffel Tower, fly to the moon, and all this kind of stuff. Why can we not build a bunch of wind turbines, say, between suburban Chicago and South Bend at the end of the lake, and over the top of the railroad? We have all the right-of-way in the world for cables. We might even electrify the railroad. We have railroads thousands of miles running in every direction between here and Green Bay and here in Minneapolis, and they go on the low ground where the wind will blow, and they may not turn all the time, but we could build millions of them and already have the right-of-way and for cables, for everything. Yeah. Why can we not consider engineering wind towers above the railroad on the railroad right-of-ways.
All right. Thank you very much, Jack. Why can't we do that?
Well, I imagine we could. I think what an electric company that's relying on wind power, and many, many electric companies across the country, of course, are building wind turbines all over, but their primary consideration probably would be the efficiency of placement of those turbines. And generally, they're on a hilltop or some higher elevation, and everything depends on the average wind speed and whether it makes sense to put up an expensive turbine in a certain area. But among other considerations, of course, would be who owns the property and rights of way, and I'm sure there are many farmers in the state who already are receiving a subsidy from an electric power company for the right to put a wind turbine on their property because the property turns out to be the right wind characteristics. And I think what Jack's suggesting is that we ought to be thinking about all kinds of possibilities, including property that's already owned, and including access to electric grids so that we make the transmission of the energy more efficient. I think among other things that Al Gore talked about yesterday was improving the efficiency of our electric grid. He talked a lot more than just using renewable sources, and he was talking about improving the efficiency, a smarter power grid, he called it. So I think, you know, Jack's comments fit in nicely with where the country has been going. We're building many, many more wind generating facilities because it's finally economical to do so.
Yeah. I think Jack was also thinking that if we already have the right-of-way on rail things, that there wouldn't be any maybe fights with, you know, neighbors who didn't want the turbines in
the I think increasingly it's true there have been fights over placement of wind turbines because many people consider them to be unattractive or they're concerned about the noise or harm to wildlife. Mm-hmm. And those are battles that probably will be fought. And where the right-of-way is already secured for this kind of public purpose, I think, and the wind characteristics are also suitable, then I think you could do that.
Right. You just don't put a wind turbine anywhere. You have
to have... Right. It's got to be placed in the right place, right location.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Jack. Laura and Blair, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy. First of all, thank you for having this program. Mm. Secondly, I wanted to mention that we keep talking as if we need to develop technologies to make these things happen right now. I want you to know I've pulled over in my car. I own a Honda Insight. It's a 2000. I just went across North Dakota into Wyoming, Montana, down into Wyoming, and then through South Dakota. It was a huge trip. And everywhere I went, people asked me, what is this car? They had never seen it. I got 75 miles per gallon on average going up and down through mountains. And again, everywhere I stopped, people said, what is this car? It's amazing. We haven't seen it.
Yeah, that's a hybrid, right, Laura?
It's a hybrid. Mm-hmm. And I get 75 miles per gallon on average in the mountains. And so, number two, and it cost me $12,000.
Quite a deal.
Yes, it mm-hmm. was. And I will tell you, by the time I save on gas, I virtually make no payments. This is not an expensive technology. Number two, I just got done watching Who Killed the Electric Car, and I would suggest to any of your listeners that they watch this movie. Electric cars have been available for quite some time, and GM, among many other major car manufacturers, developed electric cars in response to California's low or no emissions mandates, which were subsequently... removed under pressure from all kinds of corporations.
Right.
But at any rate, they had an EV1 car that ran 120 miles at average speeds on a nightly charge, and they deliberately smashed this technology. We know we've got it. And number three,
Laura, I'm sorry. We've got so many callers, and we've got lots of points.
Let me quickly respond. Mm-hmm. The Honda no longer makes the Insight. It's a small two-seater car, but certainly that's typical of what could be done with new technology. I've had one of my students drove a Honda Insight to the campus this past year. So caller is right that some technologies already exist. We had the electric car a decade ago with the EV1 that General Motors pulled off, and now General Motors is coming back with a new version of that to be called the Volt, probably on the market within a year or so. So all car manufacturers are beginning to look at these new technologies. There really needs to be public demand and some government incentives to go ahead with it.
Why would this Insight that is so needed now go away?
You'd have to ask Honda. of course, Honda, car manufacturers make their own choices. The Insight, I don't think, sold very well. It was a very small car, and I don't think there was a market for it. But then that was a few years ago before gasoline was $4
a gallon. Right, yeah.
Today there might be a market, and I'm sure Honda is reconsidering
that
type of vehicle.
Laura, I'm sorry, you had a third quick point, please?
I guess I just wanted to just basically say that they say that there's no consumer demand, and they said this in the electrical vehicle, that who killed the electric car. There was demand. The bottom line is, and I don't want to be a conspiracy type person, but they didn't sell them anywhere.
Yeah.
These people, wherever I go, they say they've never seen a car. If it wasn't for Honda Motor Works in La Crosse, I would not have been able to get this car. And I went from state to state begging. And then number two, I want you to know there's two car manufacturers that are trying to put out cars right now, Miles Cars and Phoenix Cars, and there are retrofitting for electric cars.
All right, Laura knows a lot about this. She obviously cares very, very much. I mean, now might be a whole lot different in terms of who killed the electric car. Now we're talking about who's going to, get the electric car back on the market.
Yeah, $4 a gallon gasoline makes a lot of difference. Now there's a demand that wasn't as strong a few years ago.
Yeah, thank you very much, Laura. Matt in Mount Horeb, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I appreciate you taking my call. Being an electrical engineer, this is actually this whole all of a sudden concern about alternative fuels and alternative energy is quite interesting to me. But what I think is kind of interesting is that it's not a solution that's not as sexy or as fashionable as actually energy conservation. You can go ahead and you can build all these solar-powered plants and wind farms and whatnot, but what you don't realize is that people don't realize that you have to make a lifestyle change in the fact to where, yeah, you can have a more efficient air conditioner, but if you keep your cooling at 69 degrees, you're not really doing anything. And that's one thing that people need to realize is the two-step process. One is, yes, we need to investigate alternative energy. I completely agree with that. But what people need to realize would help, if not more, is energy conservation, setting your thermostat back, going into different technologies like geothermal heat pumps, because solar farms are a great idea, but if you look at the solar farms out there, they take up a lot of land, and I'm surprised that a lot of environmentalists don't bring that up, as the fact that wind farms take up a lot of land. Solar power takes up a lot of land. So we need that energy, but we also need to conserve energy, and that's the lifestyle change. More people are not apt to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Matt is absolutely correct, and a point we all should have made is that it's not just what you drive, but how you drive your car. If people drive cautiously, if they don't brake as much, if they have a slow start off rather than a so-called jackrabbit start, if people keep the heat low in the winter and the AC higher in the summer, all that makes a difference. And retrofitting homes and just watching the way we use energy and water, which has to be pumped. So there are much that we can do without new technologies at all to reduce our energy use.
Thank you, Matt. And Barbara in Sullivan is with us now. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I just wanted to say everybody's talking about cars, 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 and I do commute to Madison every day, so I'm driving 47 miles a day, and both my husband and I work in Madison. So he has a diesel. He gets good mileage. I have the other car. I don't. But what about public transportation? It seems like that's just an issue. We've taken away all the trains. I've traveled all over the world. Trains are the main way most people, in Europe travel, and a lot of them don't even have cars or didn't have cars until just the last few years because they would have to wait forever to get them, between Madison and Milwaukee, the rail.
Yeah, and now we're losing you, Barbara, on your phone. But
absolutely. This is very similar to Matt's comment. Again, people can make choices. They don't have to. They can take a city bus. They can take a train. They can take light rail. And here again, if government wants to do a little bit more, I think what Barbara just indicated is why don't we have passenger rail line between Milwaukee and Madison, Green Bay to Madison, Green Bay to Milwaukee and Chicago? Then far fewer of us would have to use our cars to drive to a business meeting or for personal travel to one of those cities. And over time, I think that will happen. Many cities around the country, not so much in Wisconsin, are going to a light rail system that allows people to commute from the suburbs to downtown without taking their cars at all.
Well, in closing, Professor Kraft, do you think that the political will is there, that these changes will start happening?
I think it's building, and frankly, when I was reading back over Gore's statement yesterday, Jonathan Lash of the World Resources Institute said, the problem has been political will. And he says, but what we have faced in the past is now becoming an opportunity. I think we're in a presidential election year. Your callers indicate, and I think all around the country, you can see this. People are not only fed up with $4 a gallon gas, they're fed up with relying on other nations for our oil. They're fed up with the way we waste energy and the consequences. Climate change in the next few years, I think, will get a lot more attention. The political will is changing. It's not quite there yet. Congress debated a climate change bill this year for 1 week and then shut it down because there was no consensus on what to do. And the president and world leaders get together and decide we can have voluntary efforts, but they will not set targets on where to go. Now, that has to change. And what you've seen this week between Al Gore's statement and the Wisconsin Environment Report is we've got to start taking global warming seriously. We have to take energy prices seriously, and we need to start making these changes, both as individuals, but I think you cannot really manage without a government program or plans of some kind, and that's not going to happen until the public expresses its concern strongly enough to government officials that they take action.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
Michael Kraft, a professor of public and environmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. And thanks to Rob Ferret and to Karen Prager for producing this hour. Thank you for listening and calling in. We'll have much more for you coming up in our Week in Review here on the Ideas Network. If you'd like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444. You can also listen to our talk shows archived on our webpage, WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.